it just really struck me that the way that a municipality chooses to put up signs can say a lot. Even if they're saying no bikes here, the subtext can be no bikes here because we hate you, or the subtext could be no bikes here, but we really do love you, just not here.
Well, those are some of Ted Johnson's reflections after his summer vacation. He spent some time in Colorado, and he's quick to admit without his bike, but he brought his camera, and he came back with some anthropological data on cycling in some of the cities and towns that he visited. And you're listening to CDM Cyclist, and I'm your host, Frank Peters. And today's show, it's also being broadcast on The Frank Peters Show. So before we go any further, let me say thank you to my sponsors. That would be Stradling, Yonka, Carlson, and Routh, a law firm here in Southern California. Please visit them at sycr.com. And of course, the show very generously sponsored by angelsoft.net, the back office system for angel groups. Angelsoft. Check them out, please. Angelsoft.net. Well, today, it's not just your average bike story about advocacy. It's about two young men. They've got several e-commerce sites, online bike stores, one of them, biketrailershop.com, that they combine with blogging, try and build their brand, drive some traffic to the websites. The blog, Commute by Bike, out of Flagstaff, Arizona. It's a famous blog. The guys do a really good job at what they do. You're going to enjoy getting to know Ted Johnson and Josh Lipton. Well, let's get right to it, huh?
This is Ted.
Hi, Ted. Frank Peters. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Frank. How are you doing?
Good. Good.
Hi, Josh.
Yep. Hi, Josh. Frank Peters here. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very nice to meet you. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having us on the show.
Yes. Yeah, delighted to have you.
Yeah. Great.
So, Josh, may I start with you?
Yeah, definitely.
You're in the bicycle business. Tell me how so.
So, we're mainly an online retailer. We have kind of a network of specialty websites. The first one we did was Bike Trailer Shop, focused specifically on bike cargo trailers. And we saw some good success by having a real narrow focus.
Mm-hmm.
Within that narrow focus, being very comprehensive and carrying all the parts and accessories in a broad range of bike cargo trailers. With that success, we expanded into bikebagshop.com, which is focused on all sorts of bags that either mount to the bike or you can wear, messenger bags or backpacks, and then the racks to attach the bags to the bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we launched Bike Kid Shop, which is has some of the same products as Bike Trailer Shop trailers, but those are the trailers for kids to ride in, and then related products like child seats and different training devices for kids to learn to ride and things like that. So, so it's kind of been this emergence of these niche websites that have basically done really well online. We've basically had really good success with how our sites do in the Google search engine. Mm-hmm. And we focus a lot on paid marketing through Google AdWords and related products, and so it's just kind of grown up that. And we've also taken on blogging as a big part of our marketing. Ted takes on Commute by Bike and keeps that as an active community, and brings us gets us involved in a lot of different interesting things related to our industry, as well as bringing people to our stores.
And well, Ted, that sounds like your cue.
Yeah. Well, I started working for Josh a little more than a year ago, specializing in internet marketing. And after I'd been working with Josh for a few months, we had the opportunity to acquire Commute by Bike, because the person who was previously running it, decided she wanted to move on. So,
and she had an audience, and then that was the intellectual property that you acquired?
Yes.
Great.
And we had a relationship with her. Josh had done a one or two guest posts on the blog, so she actually reached out to us, thinking that we would be a good home for Commute by Bike, and that we would do right by it. And that's what we've endeavored to do, is to not over commercialize it, to make sure that the readers who were coming to Commute by Bike before we acquired it continue to have interesting content and interesting articles. And so it was a really natural fit for me, because I studied journalism in college. Oh. I've always enjoyed writing, but I never actually worked as a writer. And so I fell right into it, and it's something I really enjoy doing.
Well, isn't that the benefit of the internet, huh? English majors everywhere have an outlet now, huh?
That's right.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. I guess you're tickling me now. My story is, I was a math major in college. I would study, you know, all of the prerequisites that I had to take. And if a course had a requirement to write a paper, I wouldn't take that course. I was not only not a writer, I was totally intimidated by it. And of course, today I'm enjoying the blog very much.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, how about, what's the bottom line? Let's go right to the bottom line. The blogging plus e-commerce, how's it working out?
It's been great. We've been growing tremendously. We're growing about 50% this year. Over our revenue over last year is up 50%. So we're projecting to do about $2 million in sales this year. So it's been a kind of a solidly growing business. I started it out of my garage in 2006 on my own, and kind of have just been on a upward projection since then. Last year we didn't quite achieve the growth we wanted. It was about 20% growth last year. We had been projecting higher growth, but we had a little bump in the road because of we did a major shift to our website organization, and we lost some ranking in Google, which is a pretty important part of our business. But after recovering from that, we're back on pace. So
things like that can happen. I can relate to that too, Josh. I brought up my blogs. I changed from movable type to WordPress.
Right.
And when I did that, I was quite cavalier about all of my permalinks. I thought, oh, this would be a good time to set those up a little bit differently.
Right.
And now I'm getting 100 a day, or it stops counting after 100 a day, broken links, people coming to the site looking for one thing and not finding it. That's hurting my numbers.
Yep.
So that was a hard learned lesson. But I often say, time is on our side, right? Given enough time, you claw your way back. Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what we have to do, is we have to watch that very carefully, because it affects our bottom line so much. So we have a full-time software developer who helps us to manage and make sure that those redirect and make sure that we suffer as little as possible from any changes in the URLs.
Mm-hmm. And you're in Flagstaff, Arizona.
That's right.
Where do you find software geniuses in Flagstaff? You got a local university, or where do they come from?
Well, our genius made his way. He was working for a company called Deckers, who's a kind of a conglomerate shoe company. They own multiple brands, including Teva. UGG is their biggest brand.
Oh,
Simple
sure.
Shoes. So they actually have, they're based here in Flagstaff. Or actually just their e-commerce part of their business is based here in Flagstaff. So they have, I think, maybe 100 employees. And Frank had worked with them for quite a while, or about 3 years. But they were not really doing the style of programming that he prefers. He's an open source programmer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a more Microsoft-style programming. And so he when we were looking, we saw a good opportunity in our business and the type of – was the type of work he was interested in, so he joined us.
Yeah. But the similarity is that there, you know, Flagstaff is home to several for-profit businesses with a social mission. So that's what's, I think, similar between us and Deckers.
Oh, yeah? Social so it mission?
It was a pretty natural fit for Frank, I would think.
Mm-hmm. When you say social mission, tell me more about that.
Well, I think that we're Bike Shop Hub is a for-profit business, obviously, that is interested in encouraging the use of cycling, not just for sport and not just for touring.
It's good for the planet.
For utilitarian purposes.
Yes. I mean,
if you go to any of our shops, you will find a lot of things that eliminate your excuses for using a car.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You talk about utilitarian. I keep thinking that there is a huge opportunity, at least in my neighborhood, on bikenewportbeach.org. Just a week ago, we put up our first ever little survey. And one of the questions is, are you riding just for recreation or any kind of utility? You know, are you riding your bike to work or just riding for fun? And I think I knew the answer to that. We'll see after I get some more responses, but a lot of people here are riding, you know, just weekend riders. They're riding just for fun. They're riding in a group, getting great exercise. But to me, I keep thinking there's great opportunity ahead. There's a market out there for utility riding to go get, buy your groceries. And that's a different kind of bike. And that's where the trailer concept comes in, Josh.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. The trailer, a great thing about a trailer is an easy way for anyone to just, you know, get more use out of their bike with, you know, pretty minimal installation. It's just like a lot of them, it's just a little adapter that fits on their quick, they switch their quick release or it fits on their quick release. And all of a sudden you have a utility bike. You can use any bike, a road bike, mountain bike, just an old beater bike. And you can do a lot with it from that point. So, there's certainly other ways you can mount racks and bags, but with those types of adaptions, you're kind of more dedicating
bike
to that use. But a lot of people like trailers because you can have one bike that's your sport bike, but also use it for a lot of errands. And also the trailers have the advantage of being able to carry some really larger and more awkward items than you could mount on a bike itself.
Mm-hmm. So what's the sales process like? You're selling this on e-commerce. You've also got people walking into the shop looking at
it. Yep, the majority of our business is really through the websites. We've always had a small trickle in the door, just people who found out about us and word of mouth. And we moved to a downtown location about a year and a half ago, so that encouraged us to make our showroom a little bit more presentable. So we do have that aspect. A lot of it's just for our own use to be able to be on the phone.
The manufacturers like to see that retail outlet, don't they?
Right, they like that as well. That's definitely appreciated. So,
right. Yep. So that you don't look like you're just poaching on bricks and mortar.
Right, exactly.
Retailers, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how about some advice for bricks and mortar retailers? You're get a different kind of business style. How easy would it be for bricks and mortar to switch over and do more e-commerce retail?
Yeah, I've thought about how. I mean, we've spent a lot of effort into getting where we're at with the success of our e-commerce. So to have kind of a real strong effort at it is not an easy thing. But I think there are opportunities to do it on a smaller scale and an easier way. And really, where I think those opportunities are really focusing on I grew by focusing on one small niche and then expanding that model. But for a local shop, they if they found one little thing that they really were the experts at and really had some good knowledge in, create a small specialty e-commerce store.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? If you're a bricks and mortar guy, then you're trying to sell something to everybody who walks through the door. So you got to have tricycles and $10,000 road bikes. Is that
right?
Yeah,
yep.
That's a challenge for them too.
That's a challenge. It's also an advantage when people come into our shop. We don't really know much. I mean, we have some knowledge about that, but we really say we only know about these niches that we focused on. We don't have all this other stuff available and we don't really work with it. So we often turn people away and have them go to these shops that have a broader knowledge of all the products. The shops won't necessarily have a broad expanse of all those products available. Now, maybe they'll have one or two examples of each, but they could, you know, certainly show some of it and then be able to, you know, special order or things mm-hmm. like that.
Do those other retailers reciprocate and refer people to you?
Oh yeah, definitely. They don't in our neighborhood, they don't even really try to sell the products we do anymore just because we're so good at it. But, you know, it's a very over, like within the spectrum of bicycling products, it's a small area. So mm-hmm. I don't think they really feel threatened by it.
That's really true because I dropped in on one of our local bike shops the other day and the owner of the shop told me that he doesn't even bother with trailers anymore. Whenever anybody comes in looking for a trailer, he's happy to send them to us because trailers was like something that he never had. He didn't have the floor space to inventory a full line of trailers, right? And he just knows that we do better at trailers than him. So he sends them over to us. But he sells a lot of things that we don't sell, like bikes.
How about repeat customers, guys? That's critical to your business, right?
Yeah. We don't probably have a great deal of repeat customers. I mean, we certainly have repeat customers, especially because we sell a lot of the accessories and the parts. So we definitely have repeat business for the products that we sell because we carry the full all the things that go with them. And then I guess there are some repeat customers. Someone gets a bike trailer and then they say, oh, I can get a lot of use out of this, but I also think I need a bike bag in certain circumstances. So we do try to have our products as we expand and go into different areas to be similar. So that helps with the repeat customers. Mm-hmm. To some degree, but we don't have repeat customers like a local shop would, where they just kind of constantly return for different all their needs. So,
mm-hmm. Hey, Ted, let's switch over to the blog again. I've been following you. I've got you in Google Reader, and so everything you write shows up on my iPhone. Sometimes,
I'm sorry.
No. And. You put together a post, how long ago was it, on your vacation to Colorado?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took a vacation beginning of this month, and I didn't have a bike with me. It was not really a cycling vacation, but we went through Colorado, and one of the things I started to notice was the different styles in which different towns had their signs for telling bikes where they shouldn't be.
So prohibitions against cyclists.
Prohibitions against cyclists. And I think some of them are very legitimate prohibitions against cyclists, but I thought it was interesting how that they did their signs. And I first noticed it in Durango, where it was this very nice green sign with a stick man walking a bike and holding a skateboard. And it just said dismount zone. You know, and I thought that was a very welcoming way of saying we love cyclists, just please not here.
Mm-hmm. Was that private property or a public roadway?
That was on the public sidewalks.
Okay, sure.
It was on the sidewalks, not the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started noticing it in the different towns, and I noticed it in Salida, Colorado, which is a very bike friendly town, but Their prohibition signs were basically stenciled on the sidewalk, and it almost made me feel like it had been done by a bike-hating vigilante who did it in the dark of night. Because they were very
well. There
cruel.
Are plenty of those in any town, right?
So it just really struck me that the way that a municipality chooses to put up signs can say a lot, even if they're saying no bikes here. The subtext can be no bikes here because we hate you, or the subtext could be no bikes here, but we really do love you, just not here. You know? And right. So I just started noticing it in the different areas. So I took some pictures, and when I was done posting all about my vacation, I kind of collected the pictures that I took into a single post. And I think that kind of struck a nerve because people started talking about not only on Commute by Bike, but on other websites about the ways that their municipalities were prohibiting bikes in very illegitimate ways.
Yeah, I like the way you ended that post. How does your town say no to cyclists? Well, that really lit a fire under me because I knew exactly where I could find signs like that in my community. Please, you inspired me to put the spotlight on at least one of those situations. And in just a matter of days, we got Public Works to promise that signs coming down and they're going to replace it with just a warning sign. It's a steep hill. Everybody agreed eventually. Well, not everybody. There's people on the blogs who, could justify anything, but cooler heads prevailed and the signs coming down. So,
and you're talking about Corona Del Mar.
In Corona Del Mar, right. Fernleaf Avenue. We've got a steep hill. It's only, somebody said it's 50 yards long. So there are much bigger hills around here without signs, but it's narrow and it's got a 90-degree turn in the middle of it. And so it was well-intentioned at one point. But I think what was interesting was many of the commenters on my blog were pointing out the subtle prejudice, the presumption that, we had to exclude cyclists there because somebody might feel compelled to run one of them over if they fell off their bike in the middle of the hill, not realizing, that there's a prejudice at work there against cyclists.
Well, I think that's what was interesting, just looking at signage, though. It can give an impression of how a community feels about cyclists. And in many communities across this country, there is a general feeling that roads are for cars. And a cyclist it's okay if a cyclist uses a particular road as long as it doesn't inconvenience cars. And the signage they put up can clearly belie that prejudice.
Right. That's pretty common prejudice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're okay out here if you don't inconvenience us. So what's it like in Flagstaff? Flagstaff, is it rated as a bicycle-friendly city?
Yes, Flagstaff is a silver level bicycle friendly community as rated by the League of American Cyclists. And we have something like 8 times the national average of people who use bikes to ride to work and for transportation every day. We have some pretty good bike infrastructure here, and people use it.
Well, that's great. How about other issues on the blog? What are some of the favorite topics that you cover, Ted?
Favorite topics? Well, actually, one of the changes, or subtle changes, or maybe not subtle changes that we've done with the blog since we've taken it over is we've gotten a little bit more interested in advocacy. And one time I was looking through some of the old comments, and I noticed a lot of very almost stereotypical cycling, tree hugger, car hating, left leaning comments. And I noticed some of the reaction to it from the right in the comments. And I noticed one particularly eloquent reaction from the right by a commenter named Tom Bowden. So I contacted Tom and I said, I think this is a voice that we need on this blog. Our blog needs to be a safe place for people from the left and the right to talk about cycling and common ground. So we actually published the most popular post that the site has ever seen called How to Talk about Cycling to a Conservative.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that was written by, Tom Bowden. He's a corporate lawyer in Richmond, Virginia, and he's a very funny and persuasive writer. And so his posts are very popular. I don't think that we've dragged our Commute by Bike to the left or the right. We've just made it a place where these opinions can be voiced and discussed in a civil way.
And let me say to my listeners, I'll have a link in the show notes to this article on the blog, How to Talk About Bicycles to a Conservative. It's a fun article, and if you're a lefty, like so many of you are, I know, you'll get a kick out of this post. It's a good one. It's famous, isn't it, Ted?
It is famous. It's become Tom's calling card. Like whenever he went to the National Bike Summit earlier this year, all he had to do was say, "I'm the guy who wrote that article," and he suddenly could strike up a conversation with anybody because most people at the summit had read it.
That's right. Oh, that's fantastic. Now, earlier you were saying that you took a new look at advocacy, or you focused more on advocacy. Is that kind of typical with retailers and their initial interests in blogging? Is it a transition that you see others going through as well? More advocacy?
I would say that most bloggers that are also retailers, we haven't really seen that much of a focus on advocacy. I think there's definitely a lot of cycling bloggers with that focus, but they seem to be more independent generally.
Mm-hmm.
So would you agree with that, Ted, overall?
I would think so. Our local advocacy organization, the Flagstaff biking organization, we've got a friend who's one of the people who runs that organization. He also works at a local bike shop here, but he knows exactly which bike shops in town do and do not support the organization. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a sore point, actually, because he feels like they should be stepping up and taking a more active role in advocacy for the city.
Well, a Silver City, I suppose it's easy to sit back on your laurels at times, huh? That's quite an accomplishment, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Josh, you're a $2 million e-commerce company. What are some of the challenges that you face as you look forward growing the company to higher levels?
Right. Well, we're currently having a pretty big challenge. Some of our growth has come by utilizing a line of credit that we got through American Express. They have this kind of special business card that we started to use, and we were becoming more and more dependent on this line of credit. It was kind of part of our business strategy and plans with growth. The way it worked was you would use it for 30 days, and then you could basically extend your payment for 60 days with no interest charged. So we had a rotating balance of close to $200,000 on it, which was really helpful to be able to increase our inventory and expand pretty rapidly. So that was an essential part of our growth. Unfortunately, earlier this summer, we had a circumstance where we missed a payment. It was kind of due to some confusion because in order to use the line, we had to pay it down multiple times during the month. And we actually just had paid most of it, but miscalculated, thought we had made the final payment and it was a short payment. And the card just decided to, or American Express just decided to cut off our line of credit. They kind of said, you know, you missed your payment. No second chances. They basically just said, sorry. They didn't say you had to pay it back immediately. They gave us 12 months to pay it back in equal payments. So it's put us in a position of kind of scrambling around, having to look for other lines of credit, shuffling quite a bit.
Well, what's it like as you look to other lines of credit? Where have you gone? Local banks come to mind, huh?
Right. I had actually, before this happened, I had applied for a loan with a local bank and was declined. So based on that experience, I definitely have my hesitation about working with, actually it was a national bank, it was Chase. But after that experience, I kind of strategizing how to pursue loans. I'm actually working quite hard on really cleaning up our accounting and our financing to really be able to approach both local banks, national banks. I'm also looking at there's some different lending groups that I've been researching a little bit that they seem to be more geared to helping small businesses.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ted hinted at these issues when we set up the call just a few days ago, and I don't know. You'll find some comfort on the Frank Peters show. I just highlighted a new book called Locavesting, and it's talking about how there's not enough investment in real business, small business in this country. I can picture you and Ted enjoying Locavesting. So check that out at your local bookstore.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think what struck me about this problem that we had with American Express is that I feel like they're using a fairly rigid formula for determining who is sort of worthy of continued credit and who isn't. And I don't think they're looking into context at all, or even the industry that we're in. I think there are probably a lot of small business startups that are in fairly traditional markets that aren't necessarily as forward-looking. You know, maybe a coffee shop, maybe a gas station, maybe something that is, you know, one of a thousand portfolios that they look at every day, or a thousand business plans that they might see every day, or maybe they don't even see the business plans. And it just struck me as interesting that a business like ours that is very forward-looking and, as the price of gas goes up, as people start to turn to bicycles and away from cars as ways of doing their daily errands and getting to work and just accomplishing the very utilitarian things that they need to do in their life. That's what this business is about. And I think that's where our economy is going. Yet, I don't know if many investors or lenders are looking closely at that.
So it sounds like what you're saying is American Express was too much of a knee-jerk reaction on their part. They've just got some model that says these guys missed a payment, and they pull the string, and the trap door opens, and down you go.
Yep.
That's what it felt like, yeah.
Yeah.
I did spend some time talking to various representatives there, and really it just kind of came to, like, that's all we have to offer. We're not really even interested in looking at your finances or anything at this point. We just got lumped in into some model.
It sounds pretty defensive on their part, huh? They're just afraid.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, and we did pursue looking at, we read carefully. I had a lawyer read the terms of the agreement carefully, and they did have in there that they could pull a line of credit at any time. It wouldn't even
They've got themselves well protected, yeah.
Yep.
You'd have little recourse is what you're saying, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and one of the funny things about it is they're not making, normally they would be making 3-4% on all the transactions that we make with their card, buying inventory and covering our expenses. You know, they're not making any money from us either during this period of time. So, it's a curious situation that they.
Well, it's a shame, isn't it? That's a little vignette on the state of our economy in this country today, huh?
Right.
Yep. Growing small business with a great future struggles to find working capital.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of an ironic thing because we actually they gave us an excellent opportunity to grow for a period of time. So I feel like it's, you know, they actually helped us grow for quite a bit and then took it away. So
optimistically. You'll find a new source of working capital, and you'll continue to thrive, and you'll look back, like you say, American Express helped you get there, but won't be there to reap the benefits, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah, ironic, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Well, gentlemen, I wish you the best of luck. It's an interesting story combining e-commerce and blogging effectively in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Yep. Yeah, well, we enjoyed being on the show. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'll definitely look into your the local vesting, and it seems like you have a lot of good resources for us to explore. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Frank.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm
Okay, we're back in the studio, and once again, may I say thank you to Angelsoft.net, the back office system for Angel Groups. Angel Groups, of course, made up of individuals who invest in early stage startup companies, just like BikeTrailerShop.com and Josh and Ted's companies. There are challenges, of course, to the world of angel investing, and one of them, of course, is just organizing all the information, your meetings, your members, the funding applicants themselves, and increasingly, no one angel group can fund the whole deal themselves, so they syndicate or co-invest with other angel groups. And so how do you move the due diligence data from Boston to New York? Well, it's easy with Angelsoft. That's why it's in use by over 600 angel groups in 45 different countries around the world. You'll want to use it too. Check it out, please. Angelsoft.net. And of course, thank you to Stradling, Yonka, Carlson, and Routh, a law firm here locally in Newport Beach, California. When you're getting your startup off the ground, there are many things that you need to do and do right. Stradling, they're the people to work with when you want to get your startup moving in the right direction. Please visit them at sycr.com. Well, an interesting combination of blogging and e-commerce. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like more, I kept thinking of my interview with Lou Doctor at BikeTiresDirect.com, where he talks at length about e-commerce and the back end that he's built for his many websites. So come to the website and you'll find a link to my interview with Lou Doctor. So I'm got quite the bike ride lined up myself. Talk about bags and trailers and all of that. I've got a couple of panniers all set to go on the back of my bike, and I'm going to do a 400-mile Erie Canal ride in just 3 weeks from Buffalo to Albany. And so how do you train for something like that? Well, you, as often as you can, right? You get out on the bike. So I'm putting in about 150 miles a week on a good week. Can't do that every week. Takes too much time, but I'm trying. Some days it's a real serious ride. Other days it's just kind of loosen up the muscles. And then there are days like yesterday where just, 4 miles into the ride, had to make an emergency stop. Front brakes lock up instantly, and over the handlebars I go. I've had all day to think about just, how to put that in perspective. I can say right now it was the worst fall I've ever had. And at the same time, it wasn't that bad, I guess. Like sliding into home plate is how I hit the ground. A couple of things I'm really happy about is, of course, I was wearing my helmet. I was wearing eye protection as well. And my sunglasses didn't move an inch, a quarter inch, a millimeter. Those Oakleys stayed right on my nose. The thing I really took stock of, I went to one of my favorite websites in town, BikingInLA.com. Of course, if you're in Southern California, you're reading and following BikingInLA. And he's got some safety recommendations on one of the pages on the blog. And I caught myself as I was paging through, looking at his suggestions for safety, I caught myself thinking that there are many times I'm trying to be a more casual cyclist and wear the spandex and lycra every day, I suppose, is what that means. Dress like an average guy, going to a cup of coffee. And so some days I think, well, maybe I don't need these gloves. And, of course, I've got a pair of gloves with the fingertips cut off and the heavy pads to protect my hands because so much weight goes on the hands. And those gloves saved my butt yesterday. When I hit the ground, I hit hands first. And I'll tell you, it's the hands and forearms that are singing like an electric guitar all day today. And I can't imagine what the impact would have been, what the damage would have been if I hadn't been wearing those gloves, my eye protection, and my helmet, of course. So anyway, That's what my day's been like. I've been taking a little bit easy. I'll get right back on the bike. A scraped knee, a few other dings and scratches. I suppose the big lesson is a reminder on these safety components to so you can come home from your ride, no matter what happens, in one piece. Well, thanks so much for listening. Now, if you're listening to this on the Frank Peters Show, I'd love to have you come by the blog, leave a comment. If you're listening to this on CDM Cyclist or Corona Del Mar Today, I get a lot of comments, so come by the blogs and leave your 2 cents worth behind. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.